what triggered this bizarre behavior.
Journey into the cold heart of Northern Darkness with Nordic Crimes.
That case became like a scene from a horror movie.
A new true crime documentary series that chilled the bone.
The hunger for killing is increasing in the course of these homicides.
Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Nordic Crimes is a part of the Acast family.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Someone who was a member of the Bloods, you can see how people might find that hard to believe.
But did you... did now, hold on now.
Hello, and welcome back to 1 Minute Remaining. My name is Jack Lawrence, the host and creator of this show. Today, we begin the story of Gerald L. Johnson.
I'm currently incarcerated for second-degree murder, first-degree robbery, armed criminal action, and resisting arrest and leaving the scene of a motor vehicle accident. I'm currently serving a life plus 15-year sentence, life for the murder, life for the robbery, 15 years consecutive to the life in the robbery, and 10 years for resisting arrest.
Gerald Johnson's case is one where an innocent woman lost her life. Mr. Johnson was the reason for that, and he does not deny it. However, he says that the prosecution in this case fabricated a weapon in order to increase his sentence and convict him of felony murder. Most times when I set out to interview incarcerated men and women, we have a number of written discussions back and forth, and then arrange a date and time to speak. With Gerald, he had briefly contacted me once, and then all of a sudden, one day, I was caught well and truly off guard when my phone in PrisonPod HQ started to ring.
Hello, this is a call from...
Sure.
An offender at the Jefferson City Correctional Center.
Who is this?
To accept this free call, press 1.
I don't know any jurors.
Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Hello.
How you doing, Mr. Jack?
I'm good. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right. This is Gerald Johnson.
Oh, how are you, my friend? I'm not sure if you can pick it up in my voice, but that's my brain frantically trying to work out who Mr. Johnson is. Yeah, right. So, I was trying to find a bit about your information, and I did find a story about a car crash that resulted in someone passing away. And so that was your story, is it?
Yeah, that's my story.
Right.
Kansas City, Missouri. It happened in Kansas City, Missouri.
Gerald L. Johnson is a poster child for everything wrong in society. He is a criminal and a thug. Now, I know what you're thinking. Wow, Jack's really gone rogue here. So much for being impartial. But these are not my words. These are the words of a journalist called Michael Jensen. He would write an article for the Standard Democrat about Mr. Johnson and his sentencing for this crime. And this was my first introduction to Gerald prior to speaking with him. Obviously, when an incarcerated individual reaches out to me about telling their story, the first thing I do is Google their name to see what exactly will come up. And what came up for Gerald Johnson was definitely less than flattering. In fact, this article, I'll be honest, made me seriously consider whether or not I would in fact tell his story. But again, I have to remind myself the reason I started this show was to allow people to tell their story with no judgment from me. In his article, Mr. Jensen finishes by saying, "We can only hope that Gerald Johnson remains behind bars until the day his miserable life ends. Johnson deserves not one break from society, not one ounce of compassion. He deserves exactly what he got. Life behind bars." Now, I have no doubt, in fact, that there will be those who very much agree with Mr. Jensen's statements, that Gerald does not deserve a break or an ounce of compassion. And maybe he's right. But no matter how sad a case is, no matter how we might feel about a story or a person involved in that story, when it comes to the law, it has to be about facts. It has to be about evidence. And what you will need to decide in this case is if you believe the facts are there to convict Gerald Johnson of murder. And you may very well say that you do. And as Michael Jensen states in his article, Gerald Johnson got exactly what he deserves. Life behind bars. In his article, Mr. Jensen also writes, "In his brief 24 years on this good earth, Johnson has managed to accumulate 6 state felony convictions for various crimes, 4 probation warrants, and 22 city warrants for lesser offences. He's a career criminal and a thug, a gun-toting gangster who preys on others. So, let us find out about the man that is Gerald L. Johnson."
I come from a place of troubleness, a troubled past. My mother was a very strong drug addict. She was on drugs. She was also an alcoholic. I was taken from my mother when I was at the age of 13 years old. I was taken for her place in DFS, which is Division of Family Services. From there, I was placed in several different foster homes, foster care system. I was placed in a lot of residential facilities due to acting out. I was on a lot of They had me on a lot of different medication for hyperness, for ADHD. Growing up in foster care system, I was molested 2 times. I was also beaten. So I went through a lot of stuff.
So again, sadly, an all too familiar story with the men and women that I speak with. Gerald says that he did attend school as a youngster, but of course, due to his home life being so unstable, as well as foster care situation, he would bounce around from school to school. He would in fact find himself getting kicked out of his high school, Westport High, as he was caught smoking marijuana. In his younger years, he says that he didn't have many issues with police. However, he did get in trouble for trying to use a credit card. Were you getting in trouble with police from a young age then?
When I was an adolescent, I really wasn't getting in trouble with the police. I did, however, one time, I was at Crown Center and I found the credit card and I tried to use it in the machine, and these police, they came and just surrounded me, and they took me to a juvenile justice center, which is a detention center, and I was charged with that, when I was a kid, but ultimately it got threw out, so
right.
That's far as I've been in trouble with, as an adolescent with the police.
So with the foster situation, were you placed into foster homes, like as in with families, or were you in like sort of...
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes, I was in foster homes. I was in several different foster homes, and that's where I was ultimately molested. I was molested 2 times in the foster homes.
Wow.
And while I was in the foster homes. And I ran away. I mean, I used to just run away because I didn't trust nobody. I was scared, you know what I'm saying? So I used to just run away just to get away. So I really like lived on the streets and stuff like that.
Gerald is bouncing from foster home to foster home. He'd run away, spend some time on the streets until he was picked up and rehomed again. Eventually, he says, they started placing him in care facilities. A lot of facilities.
They started placing me in residential care facilities and stuff like that. I've been to Western Missouri Mental Health. I was in Trinity Lutheran Hospital. I was in Menorah Hospital. And they had programs inside them hospitals where I would have to live. And went to Hilltop for adolescents, for boys. I went to McCune for boys, Neyland for boys, FAC, Family Attention Center for boys. So I've been in a lot of different homes.
Yeah, wow, very unstable childhood then.
Yes, very, very unstable.
So when you were taken from your mother, did you ever see your mother again?
I didn't see them again until I was like, let's say 18. I think I was, it was like 17 or 18. And actually, I had two more siblings. I had a sister, I got an older sister, and then I got a brother that's younger than me. And they didn't get taken from my mother, but they was. My sister grew up with my biological grandmother, and then my brother grew up with his biological father, because we all three of us had different fathers. So my brother went with his father on his side, on his daddy's side, and then my sister, she went with my grandmother. Me, I was the only one that was placed because I was taken from my mother because of the drug habit and the alcohol abuse that she was dealing with, and I was taken from her and placed in the homes.
So although not getting in trouble with police, it was more of the fact that he wasn't getting caught. He says while on the streets, he would commit petty crimes.
Yes, I was. I was committing like petty crimes. Like I would steal, like I would do stuff like that. I would go in the store and steal like food. But I was like doing little petty stuff like to steal stuff like to survive. Because like I said, I would run from them foster homes because I was scared. Because once I had got molested them two times, I was like, terrified, so I didn't want to stay with nobody. I felt safe was just, like, really raised up in the streets, because that's what taught me everything, being raised in the streets by myself. That's what really taught me. I had to learn the streets, and I had to learn the streets as a kid.
Eventually, luck for Gerald does sort of change, as he is adopted by a lady he says really treated him like family. However, I say sort of change, because once adopted, he would find himself in a home which had links to the infamous gang the Bloods. And ultimately, Gerald himself ends up becoming a member. Did you ever get involved in any gangs or anything like that? Who were you hanging out with when you were...
Yes, I did. Sorry about that, Jack. I did eventually become affiliated with the Bloods. I was also adopted. I got adopted when I was like 15. I think I was like 15 or 16. And when I got adopted, the neighborhood that which was 43rd and 4th, where I grew up at, them was all Bloods. So, of course, I became affiliated with the Bloods like that over there.
Who did you get adopted by?
I got adopted by Rosie Fraser. Rest in peace. She passed away. Wonderful woman. She treated me like I was her child. Her family accepted me. Her daughters and sons, they accepted me as if like I was there. And it's a crazy thing because I was in this group home called New Beginnings. It was down the street from our home on 44th and 4th. And I used to come outside, and when I would walk to school going up to De La Salle, I would see her. And one day she was outside, and she was sitting outside. She was an older lady. I said, hey, I get a Social Security check every month. I said, I will give you $200 if you adopt me. And she was like, well, how do I do it? And that's how it happened, man. It was just weird, right? But that's how it happened.
Was that the first time you'd had a sort of real family in quite some time?
Right, that was the first time that I really was living with somebody that I felt like I had a family, and that's how she treated me. You know what I'm saying? She treated me like I was family.
So why did you've been adopted by this lady and you've been brought into a family, and so why did you gravitate toward the Bloods and the gang life?
Because that's what her family was. That's what her nephews and,
right.
and her family, her nephews and stuff. Where she lived at on her block was a drug infested neighborhood. First of all. And her nephews, they was kind of, they was some well-known guys. They was some well-known, they was affiliated with a lot of stuff. So I just gravitated to that.
Obviously, the Bloods and the Crips, they're known for the violence and all the rest of it. So I'm assuming you got involved in that side of things as well.
I got involved with that life, with selling drugs and everything. I've been shot up and everything.
Yeah,
I've been shot a few times and everything. So it was a lot. It was a lot that I've been through, man. And to be honest with you, man, it was really traumatizing. As I sit all these years later in prison and really think back on my life, it was really like You know, I feel like I was, I never got to be a kid. That's the first thing. I never got to be a kid. I never was raised in a stable household. And the closest I got to stableness was when Rosie adopted me. But even then, it wasn't as a balanced stable because of her nephews and cousins and stuff, what they was affiliated with. I gravitated to that and, you know, never looked back for a street life.
There's a lot of people that don't understand gangs. A lot of it, people say, is about belonging and family and, you know, having those people that have got your back. Was that kind of what it was for you?
You know, in a sense, you know, I felt at that time over there on 43rd and 4th, where I grew up at, back then, I felt like I was wanted. I felt like, you know, I mattered. You know what I'm saying? I felt like somebody cared about me. You know, because, you know, if I was to tell you now, would I change a lot of stuff back then that, you know, as far as would I would have rather to go back home to my mom or would I would have rather to be adopted, I would probably tell you I would rather to be adopted because I felt more safer over there. I felt, you know what I'm saying, nobody really, like, judged me, man. It was really like, you know, I come and I took care of myself and, you know what I'm saying, I had clean clothes, I had food, you know, I wasn't getting beat, I wasn't getting molested, I wasn't, none of them things was happening to me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, and I held so much in that went on in my life to where it was like I was just living a facade. I was living a fake life because everything before that I just blocked out.
So, of course, I did look you up online and I came across an article, which is, I'll be honest, not very flattering for you. But I would like to read a section of it to you, and it's in no way to sort of demean you or anything like that, but I think it's important that we talk about it.
No, go ahead.
So this person has written, right. Gerald Johnson is a poster child for everything wrong in society. He's a criminal and a thug, a gun-toting gangster who preys on others. I mean, that's a pretty harsh statement to make about someone. It says he had 6 state felony convictions for various crimes, 4 probation warrants and 22 city warrants for lesser offences. That's quite extensive for a young man of, what, you were 24 at the time, I suppose, when this was written?
No, well, actually, when that was written, I was already in prison.
Oh, right. That's a pretty serious, pretty serious words. Yeah,
but you got to realize the 22 warrants that I had, them was traffic ticket warrants.
Yeah, okay.
Traffic tickets warrant. I've never been to prison. First of all, I've never been to prison. This is my first time in prison. That's the first thing.
Yep.
The second thing, all my probations was for drugs. Because I was selling drugs. Wasn't none for no robbery. Wasn't none for no guns. Wasn't none for none of that. And if you really go look at the record, I ain't never been charged with no robbery. And this is my first time with this case. What the publicity does is, and what the news people do is they make fabricated things up. But for society to look at that person as a bad person. But I bet you they didn't have in there when the Division of Family Service put me in them foster homes and I got molested. I bet you they ain't got that in there. They ain't got in there that they put me in a foster home and I was beaten. And when they took me to Children's Mercy Hospital, they reported it and I had all them welts and bruises on me. They didn't put that in there. They just want to put everything that's bad in there about me. You know what I'm saying?
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Again, it says here, a gun-toting gangster. So, I mean, did you carry a gun with you around? You know, you said you've been shot at.
Mr. Jack, they ain't never in their life. Kansas City Police Department, Detention Center, nobody has ever found me with a gun. Never had a gun. Nobody's never seen a gun.
Someone who was a member of the Bloods, you can see how people might find that hard to believe.
Now, hold on. Are you saying, did I ever have guns? Yes, I had guns. Absolutely, I had guns.
Yeah
I had guns. I ain't gonna say that to you about that. Yeah, I had guns for protection from the Crips. Yeah, I had guns. But what I'm saying is, have I ever been charged with anybody in the world saying, did Gerald Johnson brandish a gun on me? Gerald Johnson shot me with a gun. Gerald Johnson. No, but can they tell you that people shot me with a gun? Absolutely.
It's March 4th, 2001. Gerald is about to turn 23 years old. Little, of course, did he know at the time he'd be spending that birthday and the remainder of his birthdays locked in a cell, as the decisions he would make that day would cost an innocent woman her life. Gerald talks us through exactly what happened.
I was coming southbound down Truce Avenue. I was in my Grand National, which is a Regal, which is a Buick Regal, a two-door, like an 86. And when I got to the light of 55th, coming from southbound going north, I was going north from southbound. And I said, I looked at my rearview, and I seen the police maneuvering in and out of traffic. So it was some cars behind me because it was a light at the intersection of 55th and Truce, which is a four-way light. So when the light turned green, I proceeded through the light. The police proceeded, got around the cars and got behind me and turned their lights on. So I pulled over in front of Rockhurst College. It's a college right there on 52nd or 53rd, I believe, in Truce on the right-hand side going north. It's a Rockhurst College. I pulled over right there, and the police had pulled me over. When they got out of the car, they had their guns drawn, so I made a U-turn. When I made a U-turn, and started to run. They made a U-turn. They jumped back in their cars and proceeded to chase me.
Why were you running?
Well, I ran because I had some drugs on. And I also had a probation violation out for my arrest. I had violated my probation because I wasn't going to see my probation officer because I was smoking marijuana. I smoked marijuana and PCP.
So you were on probation for, what were you on probation for?
I was on probation for possession of a controlled substance and tampering in the first degree.
You didn't serve any jail time for that?
No.
Okay.
No, I did not. I was on probation. So when I, like I said, when I made the U-turn and started to run southbound, now I'm going south on Truce, they made a U-turn behind me. Jumped back in their cars, made a U-turn behind me. When I get to the intersection of 55th and Truce, I was going too fast and I was trying to stop, but I couldn't, and it hit a car and kind of knocked it up the street. The police was, like I said, they was chasing me. They was behind me. They went around the car wreck, because if they wouldn't, they would have ran right into the wreck too. And they tried to cut me off with the car. At that time, I turned around and started to run northbound on foot. I'm on foot now. The police officer, he got out the car, which is James Regular, police officer, who they didn't let testify at trial, chased me on foot.
Realizing he wasn't going to get away on foot, he would spot a car that was being driven by Shauna Renee Cates. In the passenger seat, her husband, Daniel Cates. Gerald runs up to the car and jumps in the driver's side.
By that time, I was already in the car of Miss Cates, who was the driver of the Escort that I took and got away at the light. He had stopped and checked on the victim. When I opened the driver's side of Miss Case Escort, I just sit down on her lap. Her husband was on the passenger side. He went to pull her out the car, but the car stalled because it was a stick. It was a stick shift. It was an Escort. When it stalled, he dragged him. Now, mind you, If you read everything and look at my trial transcripts, I never said not one word. I never said get out. I never pushed them. I never punched them. I never, this is Miss Casey now, the driver of the escort. I never did any of these things to her. He said, you can take the car, take the car. You can have the car. Just don't hurt us. Just don't hurt us. He got out first. He was out the car just like that. So he turned around and came back and pulled her out. She pulled over. It was a stick shift. She stopped right there at the door when she got out and leaned back in and grabbed her purse. Then I pull off and get away from the police. James Regler, he stayed at the scene. Officer Eric Eberhard, he's driving the car. He's chasing me in the escort. I get away in the escort, ditch the car, and I'm on the run. I ultimately turned myself in 2 days later and was charged with the charges that I told you that I was charged with.
That day that Gerald decided to run from the police, just a few blocks away, 45-year-old Ida Taylor was driving home when Gerald collides with her vehicle at the intersection. As a result of that collision, she would be pronounced dead at the scene. I do not and will not in any way gloss over that fact. An innocent woman, Ida Taylor, died because of the actions of Gerald. He knows that, and he says there's not a day that he doesn't wake up and think about Miss Taylor and his decisions that day.
I destroyed a community. I destroyed a community. I know I did that. I know Miss Taylor losing her life due to the stupidity that I chose to run from the police that morning when I could have just pulled up and gave them the drugs, went to jail, and been back home by now. I was a young, stupid, wild kid, Jack. I'm being honest with you. I could stand in front of society and say, man, I made one of the biggest mistakes in my life. But one thing that they did to me, Jack, it wasn't fair, is they lied on me. And I own my responsibility for the involuntary manslaughter, because that's exactly what I did. I didn't mean to kill that lady, Jack, man. I didn't get up in the morning and say, I'm going to go out here and kill that lady. Jack, they ain't never had nothing on me. When it comes to robbery anybody, when it comes to car, none of that, Jack. These are the first serious charges I ever had in my life, and they false. But let me back up just a little bit. The escort, when I entered on her side, they said that I had a gun. This would give me the first-degree robbery and armed criminal action and the second-degree felony murder. My alternative in that indictment was involuntary manslaughter, which would have carried 7 years. But because the prosecutor didn't want me to have that, she enhanced the charges because she had them to say that I had a gun. Now, listen to this, Jack. What I would like for society to listen to. I'm guilty of everything that I did, Jack. I'm guilty of running from the police because I had drugs on me. I'm guilty for running into Miss Taylor and taking her life. It ain't a day that I don't get up and reflect back on that, man. As my witness, I'm being honest with you. I done did 23-plus years here, Jack. I ain't got no reason to lie to you. No reason at all. Jack, I never had a gun. Now listen to me. When I ran them to the driver's side of the escort, right, Miss Cates, when I ran to the side of her car, the driver's side. She was the driver. I ran straight to her door. I didn't run to the passenger side, the back door, nothing. The driver's side door, and I opened it. I sit on her left leg, the car stalled because it was a stick. She said, Mr. Johnson never had a gun. She gave a videotape statement. She gave a statement on the day that it happened and said, Mr. Johnson never had a gun. She came to trial a year later. Ms. Shauna Case got on the stand and said, Mr. Johnson never had a gun. I know your radar just went up with that right there. This is the victim now. Let me say this, and then I'm going to let you ask the questions. The two police officers, these is officers of the law, who they just said in them articles how the society view us criminals. On the day that it happened, service of the law, police officer, Kansas City, Missouri police officer, Eric Eberhard being a driver, James Regler being the passenger, gave a videotape statement, gave statements on the day that it happened, got field reports that they wrote. Guess what they said, Jack? They never spoke of me having a gun. They never spoke not one time of me having a gun. Okay, hear me out, Jack. the driver of the police car because for some reason, quote unquote, James Regula, a year later at trial, didn't get to testify. The police officer that literally chased me on foot a little bit. They wouldn't let him testify. They said he was out the country, right? Okay. The driver, Eric Eberhardt, he comes back to trial a year later. Guess what he says? Mr. Johnson had a gun cupped to the palm of his hand. And the reason he said that is because the passenger, which is Daniel Cates, the husband, said Mr. Johnson had a gun. But his statement changed so many times. But they needed his statement to corroborate with the police statement so they can jump my charges up to get me the life plus 15 years sentence.
Who was the first one to bring up this supposed gun?
The first person that brought up the gun was a passenger, which is Daniel Cates, which was a passenger of the car. I didn't enter on his side, Jack.
Yeah.
Jack, I didn't open his door. I opened his wife's door, but because he didn't want to feel like a, I'm not trying to be funny, and I'm not trying to be rude.
No, I get it.
He didn't want to feel like a, so he had to come with a lie. Man, Mr. Johnson had a gun. Why your wife saying, this is a woman, Jack? This is a woman who's a driver. Why would this woman, Jack, I'm not trying to be funny either. These is white people. I'm not trying to be funny, big dog. These is white people. That black guy, he had a gun. I was terrified. Why would this woman say from day one, Mr. Johnson never had a gun? I entered on her side, Jack. I opened her door. I ran to her door, Jack. She see me coming. Why, she didn't say I had a gun, Jack. She the driver.
You have 1 minute remaining.
Do you want me to call you right back? Cause it's
Yeah. That'd be great. Yes, perfect.
I'll call right back.
All right, cool.
Okay.
All right, bye. Yeah. And that's all we have time for. But coming up in our next episode, I will read the transcripts from not only the trial, but also the statements made by all the witnesses from the time of this incident, including the couple that Gerald carjacked and the two police officers that gave chase.
He said on the stand, this is where he incriminated himself. On the stand, the prosecutor asked him, what do you watch for when a criminal is committing a crime? You know what he said? We watch for hands and body language.
And I put a question to Gerald. Mate, obviously I'm hearing everything you're saying, but at the end of the day, what we can't shy away from is the fact that an innocent woman died that day because of decisions that you made, and you ran from that scene. There is going to be more than one person listening to this going, well, you made your bed, you lie in it. Much like that article that we read at the start, essentially, you got what you deserved. What would your response be to that?
I'm gonna read you something.
Next time, on 1 Minute Remaining. 1 Minute Remaining is a Mashed Pumpkin production, created, hosted, and produced by Jack Lawrence. Audio and sound design by Jack Lawrence and Dom Evans of Earsay.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.